I want to ask you a question. Have you been insulted lately? No show of hands, don't need that. Just think about it. Have you been insulted lately? Because if you haven't, this may be your lucky day. You'll see why I say that. And it depends on where the insult comes from. Let's say your mate says something to you or about you that you might take offense to. You know, it matters what the motivation was. Whether it's derogatory or whether it's intended to promote a necessary change. How do we take it? Depends on where it comes from. What if it was your daughter's boyfriend that said something? How would you take that? Any differently? What if it was your best friend? You know, had a few beers together and things get said that maybe you wouldn't ordinarily say, but it might come across as an insult or not. It depends on what the intent was. Well, there's an insult to perhaps all of us, and it's surprising who it was given by. But if we turn to Luke chapter 16, there's something there that we wouldn't ordinarily think, but I expect it's a correct assessment of the real situation. Luke chapter 16. I'm going to begin in verse 1. He says, "Then said he unto the disciples, it's impossible that offenses will come, but woe unto him through whom they come." Things happen. Things are said that at times are offensive. But then he goes on. He says, "But it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he be cast into the sea, than that he should offend one of these little ones."
That's Luke
17. 17, no wonder. Oh, I like that, though. That's a good beginning. Let's back up to 16. Thank you. Okay. "And he said unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man, which had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods." He wasn't doing his job very well. "And he called him and said unto him, how is it that I hear this of you? Give an account of thy stewardship, for you may be no longer steward." I'm going to fire you. "Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my Lord takes away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig. To beg I am ashamed. I am resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. So he called every one of his Lord's debtors unto him, and said unto the first, how much do you owe? And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said unto him, take your bill, and sit down quickly, and write 50. Then said he to another, and how much do you owe? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said unto him, take your bill and write 80. And the Lord commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely. For the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light." Now, how do we take that? He's basically saying the religious people aren't as smart, aren't as wise as the rest of the world in many cases. Wouldn't that be an insult? How do we take that? What is he getting at? That's the thing. You know, if someone were to say to you, that guy over there is a whole lot smarter than you are, and we didn't think so, we thought we were smarter than that guy anyway, wouldn't we take that as an insult? Is Jesus Christ insulting his people? The children of the world are wiser, we could qualify that, say, in many respects, than the children of light. Why would he say such a thing? What was he getting at? Do we understand that? I think it's important that we do. Who were these people? Now, keep in mind, the steward and the property owner and the debtors, none of them were converted people. That wasn't the issue here. That wasn't really the issue. That wasn't the contrast. But he ends up taking it there to show the contrast between the average person in the world and the person who God has called and enlightened. At times, the ecclesia aren't very astute in their dealings. I think that's what he's getting at. We can understand essential points of biblical truth where the world doesn't, but that isn't the only part of it. What was this servant giving away? He was giving away his master's resources, making friends for himself, that when he was tossed out, he would have a people that he could go to get what he needed. Another job, let's say. How does that apply in our situation? We could look at that as, in a sense, networking. He's setting himself up to have friends outside so that he could, you know, call on his so-called friends when he needed them. Jesus Christ is saying, there's a bit of wisdom in that. But our question is, what's the application as it applies to us? Because this was written for our edification, after all. We're given an insult, if you want to take it as one, hopefully to motivate. That's what it needs. That's what we need to understand it to be taking. We need to make friends with a purpose. Now let's consider our relationship with those outside. We live in a world that is pretty ignorant of what's going on. We live in a world that doesn't really care about the things that matter. How should we relate to those people? Should we put them off with our superiority? It's easy to do. But should we at least interact with people in a way that at least leaves us on good terms? We're not expecting them to become converted by our being exposed to us, but at the same time, we don't want to build a wall either to where they would have nothing to do with us, have no interest. If we fall into a difficult situation, who cares about you? You know, that attitude. What is he getting at here? And this is the interesting thing. Now, we could also assess this particular insult as it relates to our relationship with those of like beliefs. Okay? Do you see the possible interaction there? Could be. But it matters what kind of an insult it is, I suppose, whether it's corrective or whether it's intended to be derogatory. And that's what we need, perhaps, to assess. Is there any value? When someone insults us, is there any value to what they just did to us? I think a lot of times there is. Because an insult, if it's got any truth to it, an insult is a look at ourselves, perhaps, that we wouldn't necessarily do ourselves. Okay? See how that works? In Romans 13:11 it says, "And that, knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of our sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than we believed." This point in time, it's more urgent that we live in a world with wisdom than ever before. Now this verse shows us that the early church itself, this early on, had lackadaisical people. It's an easy disease to acquire. I mean, what's the issue with the Laodiceans? We understand what their characteristic was. What was the issue in their case? Being lukewarm. Being lackadaisical. Not being attentive to the dangers of the world that they're living in, like Paul Harvey just said. Stuff's going on all around us, and it's increasingly warped and distorted and evil. We live in that. Are we sensitive to it? Are we aware of it? 1 Corinthians 11, verse 30. He mentions, "For this cause, many are weak and sickly among you, and many sleep." This isn't talking to the world. This is talking to the fellowship of faith. You know, if there was something dangerous about, and you saw someone sleeping, wouldn't you want to wake them up? How would you do that? Some people, when you wake them up, they wake up swinging. Or who knows how their reaction is going to be. It takes wisdom to know how to wake someone up. Now, this unjust steward knew how to do what he was intending to do. Not saying he was right. Not saying it was a good thing. I'm just saying he knew what he needed to do. Can we say the same for ourselves? In 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 6, "Therefore, let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober." Verse 7, "For they that sleep, sleep in the night, and they that be drunken are drunken in the night." That's referring to a spiritual condition, not talking about actual sleep or actual drunkenness. But what do those mean? A person who's asleep is not aware of what's going on around him. A person who's drunken is disoriented. What's the night? The night is that point in time when you can't really see. Question is, how do we come across to others not in the faith? That may be the core issue of all of this. How do we come across to others? Do we put them off? You know, enlightenment can have an effect. It can have a good effect, or it can have a bad effect. It depends on what we do with what we know. Enlightenment can distract us away from having a broader perspective. There's this thing called religious overthinking. In other words, people can get a little too religious. I mean, it's a beautiful world, to know the truth and to focus on the truth all the time. But it can affect our response, our relationships with other people. And that's where extreme wisdom is necessary, to know how to relate to others in a way where they see a good example, but in a way where they're not put off. Maintaining that relationship with people not of our faith can be important too. Maybe not at the moment, but who knows in time. But there's this thing called religious overthinking. We're a little too deep into the religious thing, in our conduct at least, to where people are just turned off. But another effect it can have is it can take our minds away from what's really going on in the world. We could call it cognicide of comprehension. In other words, we kill off that area of our awareness that helps us understand what's going on, why it's going on, to know what to do about it, what to think about it, and what to say to other people. It's hard to live in this world without interfacing with other people. We have to say the right things in the right way if we're to ever leave a good feeling with others. A good assessment of reality is a necessary part of a successful life, even a successful spiritual life. We have to have a good assessment of reality. Now, granted, there's a great deal of reality in the Word, but it's the application of that in a wise manner as it relates to our interface with other people. That's the important thing. And I think that's what this wise steward narrative is talking about. Not so much making friends in the world to be like them, but at least to keep the avenues of communication open to where we can plant the right seed in the right place at the right time. That's where, perhaps, the children of enlightenment aren't as wise as they ought to be. In certain ways, the world is good at what I'm talking about. In other ways, it's not. But our relationship with other people, as it relates to, or as it involves relating our religious beliefs and our conduct before the world, can be very important. We want to leave a good impression. We want to leave the doors of communication open to where we can plant the right thought, the right piece of advice at the right time. Sort of in a way, like being witnesses. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 5. I always love this passage. Had a chance to use it many times. Got in trouble myself quite a bit relating to our ministry with this one. But let's look at it. This is an insult from the Apostle Paul. Imagine that. If we take it as one. Hebrews chapter 5. I'm going to start in verse 11. Of whom we have so many things to say and hard to be uttered, seeing you are dull of hearing. Paul is speaking to the church. How would you take that if someone said that to you? Seeing you are dull of hearing. He goes on to say, for the time you ought to be teachers. Nope. You have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God, and are become such as have need of milk and not of strong meat. You've been in the truth for 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years sometimes. Still need milk? Can't handle strong meat yet? Can you see the insult there? He's speaking to the church. For everyone that uses milk is unskillful in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe, spiritually infant still, after all that time. He says in verse 14, but strong meat belongs to them that are of full age, spiritually matured, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. That's a tall order right there. Paul is saying, after all this time, you ought to be teachers. You ought to have a capability of relating God's truth to other people. In a practical and useful way. Now we can understand someone who's new in the faith, you need to operate with a good deal of caution. That's a measure of wisdom right there. It seems like it's the new people that tend to not use that wisdom and blurt out things that, put people off. But the longer we're in the faith, the more we know. The more we're obligated, I think, to be useful in representing the faith to others. Whatever response you get, who knows? But I'm just saying, God wants us to use our God-given faculties. Paul is faulting those people that he was writing to for not using their senses of discernment, for not being apt teachers. It's a challenge to all of us. We need to be doing that, one-on-one and in a group situation. In Jeremiah 16, there's that well-known passage, Jeremiah 16, verse 19. And this kind of shows the situation in the world that we're living with. I think we realize it, but there's going to come a time when they're going to realize it. It says, O Lord, my strength and my fortress and my refuge in the day of affliction, the Gentiles shall come unto you from the ends of the earth, and shall say, surely our fathers have inherited lies, vanity, and things wherein there is no profit. When that day comes, we're probably going to want to say, what took you so long? What it means is they're coming to realize that they inherited their wrong beliefs, the lies, from their parents and grandparents. We live in a world that is living a continual succession of lies. We live in an age of extreme deception. Matthew 24 tells us about that. A time when even the very elect will be deceivable. The ability of people to rationalize their actions or their mistakes is extraordinary. We've seen an example of that this week. How they want to explain away something that is so obvious. The world declares evil as good. And people go along with it, sure. They agree. Because they don't know. Or they don't want to know. More likely, they don't want to know. We need to be circumspect as to what's going on, especially where it involves the area of Bible prophecy. For a lot of us, prophecy is difficult to understand. But it gives us an outline that we can balance against what's going on in the world and get a better picture of the real situation and where it's going to lead. In 1 Peter 3:18, there's a tiny little piece of revealing information. 1 Peter 3, verse 18. This talks about something that happened a long, long time ago. I think I want verse 19. Well, we need verse 18. For Christ also has once suffered for sins, the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but quickened by the Spirit, by which also he went and preached to the spirits in prison, which sometimes were disobedient, when once the long-suffering of God waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was preparing, wherein few, that is, eight souls, were saved by water. Very complicated sentence. But let's get the picture of what's going on here. Spirits were put in prison. They were being restrained from what they at one time had the ability to do as it relates to interfacing with humanity. God stopped a certain amount of spirit interface with humanity back in the days of Noah, this is when that was, and put them under restraint. But then if we looked into 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, we see the other end of that. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 7. I'm going to start in verse 5. Remember you not that when I was yet with you, I told you these things? And now you know what withholdeth, that he might be revealed in his time. For the mystery of iniquity does already work. Only he who now restrains, it should read, will continue to restrain until that restraint is taken out of the way. Then shall that wicked one be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. What he's telling us here is that restraint that was put on back in the time of the flood is going to be lifted. Ultimately, resulting in the exposure of that man of sin that is going to be destroyed at Christ's second coming. This is what we need to understand about our age in which we're living. That spiritual restraint was put on, and it's going to be lifted off. We are going to see an infiltration into our cultures that are demon-inspired. Is that any surprise to anyone? Paul Harvey was talking about that 57 years ago. Hasn't gotten any better since. In fact, it's gotten a whole lot worse. Things that we could say today, he didn't even realize back then. But that's the condition. Wisdom is going to become increasingly essential for us to have appropriate responses to what's going on. Proverbs 4, verses 5 through 7, talks about seeking wisdom and how priceless it is. Proverbs 7, Proverbs 4, rather. Starting in verse 5. Get wisdom. Go get it. Get understanding. Forget it not. Neither decline from the words of my mouth. Forsake her not, and she shall preserve you. Love her, and she shall keep you. Talking about wisdom. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all you're getting, get understanding. What good is wisdom without understanding? What good is understanding without wisdom? In a world today that we're living in, we come across many instances where there are questions that we're strongly discouraged from asking. There's points of truth that we can't say. We've run into that. We see a leadership in the world today that is oriented to having their own way. That's all that matters to them. They're not there serving our needs or our interests or our benefit. They're there to serve their own interests. They're there to have their own way. And the truth can expose their ways. It can expose their political agendas. Truth is not welcomed in this world in which we live. Psalm 94:10. And this is enlightening, or this is, precautionary for our own selves. He that chastises the heathen, shall he not correct? He that teaches man knowledge, shall he not know? If we're going to correct other people, you would think that we'd be inclined to correct ourselves as well. God chastises whom he loves. And there's a verse that tells us it ain't pleasant. It ain't pleasant. We've heard that expression, being taken to the woodshed. We know what that means. Back in the day, that was a reality. Not so much today. And growing up, our woodshed was foot of the cellar stairs. That's where Mom did it. Oh, that perp walked down those stairs. And she had a stick that, let me tell you, it hurt. I don't know why I got it so often. I mean, I was such a good kid. She may not have thought so. That's a self-assessment, of course. I guess she didn't agree. Well, then again, maybe it was cause and effect. Maybe it worked the other way around. You know what I'm saying? Oh, that dreaded walk down the stairs. I don't know that my brother got it so often as I did. But maybe it's just memory. You remember when it was you, not so much them. Anyway. Well, there are people who, quote-unquote, want to stick to the basics all the time. We can understand the value of that, especially the people aren't particularly motivated to be growing in knowledge. You know, unfortunately, and that was part of our history, sticking to the basics. That trunk of that tree, how many times did we hear about the trunk of the tree? I mean, the trunk of the tree was fine. Nothing wrong with it. But a tree needs branches, and it needs leaves and twigs and hopefully fruit up there. But sticking to just the basics can be a formula for malnourished growth. Sort of a spiritual stagnancy. We shouldn't be content with that. We're told to grow in grace and knowledge. We need to keep up with the modern developments. There's things going on today that we never would have imagined as even possible in the past. We can't remain in a 1980s worldview when interpreting prophecy. The more time goes by, the more clarity comes out. We live in a world where we're continually distracted. There too, we need to stop and focus our minds on the realities that are happening all around us. There's a disconnect between the present situation and the conceptualized world to come. We can live in a mental state where we're focused on the world to come, and that's fine. But at the same time, we need to recognize where we are in the present world and the present age. Every conscientious Christian at some point in time is going to feel a little bit of the spotlight. There is a prophecy that talks about the people of God being the focus of Satan's wrath. It's going to come. We can count on that. Are we prepared? Are we preparing ourselves? Proverbs 18 and Hosea 4 talks about God's people being destroyed for lack of knowledge. Shows us how important knowledge can be. We need knowledge that makes sense, that knowledge that correctly assesses the reality. There's a practical effect on our health and welfare if we ignore the opportunities to know certain things. In Revelation 12:16, it talks about the earth helping the woman. We should probably look at that. Revelation 12. Because I've always wondered, what does that mean? I mean, in a way it's encouraging, and in another way it's kind of disturbing. 12:13. Verse 13, and when the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time, times and half a time, from the face of the serpent. We've always understood this passage to be referring to a time of protection for those people who need it. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And it says, the earth helped the woman. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. What exactly does that picture reveal? Whatever it is, it's something real. It may take some time before we come to fully understand that. I think I see something that could explain that. The religious world, particularly the evangelical world right now, is standing in the gaps. They're taking on some of this stuff that's going on in the world. They're going to take the heat for what they do. How successful they'll be remains to be seen. But I don't know if something like that would help explain this passage, where they're going to take the heat that we might otherwise. But then again, it depends on what we're doing, doesn't it? In Ezekiel 33, verses 2 through 7, we're told that we ought to be watchmen. And if we're going to be successful watchmen, we need to know what to watch for. Malachi 4, chapter 4, I think it is. It talks about us. No, Malachi chapter 3. Talks about speaking often one with another. There are religious environments where that kind of thing is discouraged. There's some things you can't say in some situations. There again, wisdom. Wisdom. We have a responsibility, but at the same time, we need to do what we need to do in the most effective way. We live in a world right now where we're seeing the cancellation of basic rights. Paul Harvey didn't bring that out, did he? There's things we can't say. There's pronouns we can't use. People are being intimidated for their medical history. Crazy thing. Since when has that been on the table? We're seeing our freedoms of movement and commerce impinged. In Matthew 10:16, we're told we need to be harmless as doves and wise as serpents. Tall challenge. That's tough. In 2 Timothy 2:15, another familiar verse, that to study to show ourselves approved unto God. It tells us that there's an approval requirement. It's not just float along. We need to watch world news. We need to watch the conditions that are developing. Because a great deal of it has a parallel in prophecy fulfillment. That's given for our awareness. Little did we know back in the 70s or the 80s what amount of pure and deliberate deception was being engineered. We think what's going on right now is a recent development. This has been in the works. This has been planned for at least a century. There's whole books written a generation ago that talk about the very thing that's happening now. It was planned. It was the intent to do this. We live in the world that is going to affect us, and we need to know how to respond to all of that. Back in the 70s, we were just babes in the woods. We thought we understood so much. And it was great. I mean, what we knew was a good starting point. But boy, we should have learned, and I'm sure we did learn a lot since then. There's another insult that we find in the pages of Scripture. I didn't say it. Don't blame me. But it's a place that says, some of you aren't going to make it. Now, hopefully that's not the case here. But in the religious world in large, I expect it is. Where he says, many are called. That's genuine. Called. They didn't just pass by a piece of literature. They were called. Something reached their mind and touched their thought process. Many are called. But as it ends up, only a few are chosen. Is that an insult? Depends on the person, I suppose. Is that derogatory to say that to people? It's sobering. And hopefully it doesn't apply here, but who knows? Who can say? That statement was given in two contexts. It's in Matthew 20, verse 16, and Matthew 22, verse 14. Many are called, and few are chosen. And it's given in the context, first, of unequal spiritual gifts, and in the other instance, it's given in the context of a wedding attendee. That would be a wonderful sermon or sermonette for somebody sometime. Many are called, but few are chosen. It's a reality. Now, there's another place that talks about us always being ready to give an answer. That requires an awareness. And we need to be able to give an answer not only to those with whom we deal with every day, but also to each other. We need to be able to give answers, to pose good questions, and to be able to answer those questions among ourselves. It's how a body grows. Do we do that effectively? Do we do that to the degree that we ought to be? It's a matter of being circumspect. There's an admonition in Hebrews chapter 10 that I think is appropriate here. Hebrews 10, verse 25. I'm going to start in verse 22. Let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. Verse 24, and let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works. That's what I just talked about. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching. That day is approaching. What could be more obvious? But this narrative about the unjust steward, it's up to us to assess what life application this has. It may have more than one. Is there an area of life that we don't fully comprehend? Is it talking about foresight? He saw what was coming. He dealt with it in his own way. It involved consequences. It involved meaningful interactions. It involved actively building relationships. I'm not saying they were good or right or just or anything like that. It involved interactions or networking with other people. And, most importantly, assessing the right people to interact with. We can be lights in the world, or we can be flame killers. How many years have we spent holding a negative regard for like believers? I don't know that that's our problem, but I can list for you some organizations where it is a problem to this day. Holding a negative regard for people that God has called and given His Spirit to, and who believe pretty much exactly as we do, and yet we hold them at arm's length. And they, us. There's an old expression, I won't say it's a good one, but it was used in our religious world: never let a good crisis go to waste. Well, we're facing a crisis world. We need to assess the value and what we can do. What good is an insult if we don't know what it's intending? What good is an insult if we don't respond positively to it? Sometimes that's the intent. The Apostle Paul threw out what we could call an insult. Jesus Christ, in a sense, in a couple of different ways, threw out an insult, perhaps to motivate the people who aren't thinking as carefully and as wisely as they should be. Hopefully, that will come out, and hopefully, we'll know what to do.